You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight after 7, it's True Stories Told Live on the Moth Radio Hour. This week, an hour devoted to misfits. An awkward teenager finds his place at a museum. A child is given a sense of structure and order in life. And a daughter does her best to soothe her elderly mom. That's tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
First, Senate confirmation hearings are currently underway for several of President-elect Trump's picks for his cabinet. Among those being vetted, candidates who will work in agencies tied to the environment are being asked about climate change. Their answers have taken some by surprise.
Do you agree that global warming is a hoax?
I do not, Senator.
So Donald Trump is wrong?
I do not believe that climate change is a hoax.
Man has had an influence. I think that's undisputable as well. So climate is changing. Man is an influence.
I believe the climate is changing. I believe some of it is naturally occurring, but some of it is caused by man-made activity. The question is how we address it in a thoughtful way.
You just heard Scott Pruitt, Ryan Zinke, and Rick Perry testifying in front of senators. These three nominees could represent the EPA, the Interior, and the Department of Energy, respectively. Their answers seem to have parted ways, at least somewhat, with President-elect Trump's stance on climate change.
Rob Meyer joins us now. He's an associate editor at The Atlantic, where he covers climate change and technology. Rob, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Well, a new administration coming in tomorrow, and President-elect Donald Trump has said in the past, in tweets, that he believes climate change is a hoax orchestrated by China. And in December, he was asked by Chris Wallace of Fox News Sunday about his stance, and here's what he had to say.
Where are you on the environment?
I'm still open-minded. Nobody really knows. I'm somebody that gets it. And nobody really knows. It's not something that's so hard and fast.
Now, Rob, you cover climate change for The Atlantic. What is the consensus about climate change from the scientific community?
Yeah, man, it's not something that's hard and fast. It's not like a property of the Earth's, you know, atmospheric chemistry or anything. The consensus in the scientific community among, you know, at least 97%, perhaps even more, of working climate scientists and really earth scientists and you know, scientific researchers who spent time on the issue, is that, you know, not only is the Earth's climate changing, not only is it changing in ways that we can observe within our lifetimes, but that human industrial activity, that greenhouse gas emissions, are the driving influence, are the thing that's changing the climate. Associated with human changes in land use, also done by humans. Contra what Trump says, at this point, there's about 20 years of history in the scientific literature that is very clear that people are the ones doing the climate change. And not only that, but we've been able to predict it fairly well, too.
And we just heard, before we started talking, clips from the hearings this week. We heard from Texas Governor Rick Perry, who's up for the Department of Energy. We heard from Mr. Pruitt, who is a nominee to head the EPA, and also from Ryan Zinke for the Interior. Did anything surprise you in their answers?
I mean, the first thing that I thought was interesting is they were clearly all pre-briefed about kind of what the Trump administration line on climate change is going forward. They all said basically, as we all just heard, the same thing. The climate's changing and humanity is an influence, but how much of an influence is humanity, they're not going
to
say.
Right. That seemed to be the main distinction they were drawing. No one said climate change was a hoax, but it seemed as though everyone said, but we don't know how much humans are influencing it. That seems to be the line.
Exactly. And we do know, to be clear, you know, science is very clear that we are the ones doing the influence. I think the second thing is that this is the Republican Party's line on climate change as a whole, especially at the national level, has varied a lot. Sometimes over the past 8 years, it's been much more kind of blanket denial. It said, this isn't happening. Climate scientists are lying to you. Before that, the Bush administration sounded more like the Trump administration does now, where they said, oh, you know, sure, it's happening, but how bad will it get? Do we know that humans are the ones actually causing it? Scientists aren't sure about all of those things. I would say the main goal of all of this has been that to see doubt about whether about what the scientific evidence shows on climate change. You know, it's not to get people to think that climate change isn't happening. All they want people to think are that climate change isn't clear, is that we don't know everything yet, and to kind of put off action further into the future.
And during his hearing, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was talking with Scott Pruitt, getting his take on climate change. And we have a little bit of that exchange between Sanders and Pruitt. Let's take a listen.
You are applying for a job as administrator for the EPA to protect our environment. Overwhelming majority of scientists say we have got to act boldly. And you're telling me that there needs to be more debate on this issue and that we should not be acting boldly.
No, Senator, as I've indicated, the climate is changing and human activity.
But you haven't told me why you think the climate is changing.
Well, Senator, the job of the administrator is to carry out the statutes as passed by this body. And to
why is the climate changing?
Senator, in response to the CO2 issue, the EPA administrator is constrained by statutes.
I'm asking your personal opinion.
My personal opinion is immaterial.
To the job of you are going to be the head of the agency to protect the environment, and your personal feelings about whether climate change is caused by human activity and carbon emissions is immaterial?
No, it was an exchange between Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders questioning EPA nominee Scott Pruitt, and he's been a controversial nominee for Democrats and for others. He has sued the EPA several times over the years. What did you take away from that exchange? He's saying his personal opinion doesn't matter in this case.
Yeah, I mean, this was a tack tried by Sanders and by a lot of Democratic senators to get, I think, the depths of Pruitt's nonchalance or apathy about the issue to kind of come forward. And Sanders was the one most successful. I think what I took away from the exchange is something that, you could gather from the rest of Pruitt's record, which is kind of on federalism grounds and on these, extremely narrow textualist readings of what federal environmental laws say. He thinks he wants to shave away the a lot of EPA regulation and sees his job as kind of the lawyer in chief, the person who will come in and restore things to what should be their rightful austerity. While Sanders is saying, you're not just in charge of any old federal, division, you're in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency, and you should care about the project of environmental protection as opposed to just being somewhere else in the government. I think the one thing that was interesting is, from the whole hearing, is Pruitt kept talking about how, because of this Supreme Court case from 2007, the EPA has a legal obligation to regulate carbon dioxide under the Clean Air Act. And it absolutely does, both as a legal fact and I think as an ethical fact. But he never got pressed by Democratic senators as to what that obligation would be, how he would interpret that obligation, and how he would go forward with that obligation. And so he was clear that he was interested in regulating this issue. He never described how he would do it.
Rob Meyer is with us right now. He's an associate editor at The Atlantic, where he covers climate change and energy.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think the federal government should do to address climate change? What do you expect Donald Trump's administration to do based on what you've seen from the president-elect and his cabinet nominees so far? Should the government do anything at all to address climate change? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we're continuing our conversation about how climate change is being discussed during the Senate confirmation hearings. And we're talking right now with Rob Meyer. He's an associate editor at The Atlantic, where he covers climate change and technology.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. How big a role should climate change reduction play in the upcoming administration? What do you think of the new administration's approach to climate change and what you've heard from the president-elect and his cabinet nominees so far? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And based on what you've heard so far at these hearings, Rob, do you expect that any of these nominees would be a contrarian to Donald Trump, what he said so far? I mean, if Donald Trump stands by what he has said, that's unclear at the moment, but would you expect them to be at odds and maybe pursue, you know, differing policies?
I think that is probably unlikely. You know, I think it depends less kind of what Donald Trump says he believes in radio interviews and TV interviews and more what he does. I think actually one of the unifying parts of the Republican Party platform right now is an opposition to doing much about climate change at all. That unites the party far more than you know, economic issues or medical you know, healthcare issues do, and it goes hand in hand with increasing fossil fuel extraction, which has been a goal both of kind of the George W. Bush era of the party and the incoming Donald Trump era of the party. So I think it's unlikely. I think the most interesting kind of cabinet post for me is Rick Perry at Energy. In Texas, as governor, Perry was really good at supporting renewable energy, you know, wind and solar, and specifically wind. And there's a small part of the Department of Energy budget that's nonetheless really important for the kind of American renewable energy world of renewable R&D funding and loan guarantees and stuff like that. And I expect that it would be very possible that Governor Perry, kind of seeing the role that renewable energy has played in his own state and how economically important it is to lots of states in the country, not just those on the coast or, you know, those that typically vote for the other party, would continue kind of those corporate R&D funding efforts and loan guarantees. And that's something that I'll be very interested to watch as the administration takes over.
Let's take a caller now. We have Willem joining us first in Colfax. Willem, hi.
Hi. Well, on the issue of climate change, I think over 150 national science organizations around the world have concluded that it is man-made and that we are contributing as CO2 emissions that, you know, are causing the climate change. Plus, there's not only is there scientific evidence, there's empirical evidence. I mean, we can just see it all around. And I think seeing how it's the job of the government to protect its citizens, I think it's important that we address this issue. And I'm left to wonder, why are the Republicans? I mean, the only conclusion I can come to is it's financial support from the oil and gas industry. There doesn't seem to be any other logical reason for them to deny it. And I think it's, as far as being pro-life, I think it's a pro-life issue because, you know, the life of the planet, all of God's creation is at risk.
Willem, thank you so much for the call. And Rob, what do you think? Is it the job of the government to protect the planet and preserve it if with climate change?
Well, I mean, I definitely agree with the caller that the job of the government is, you know, mutual defense of the citizens. And there are plenty of risks posed by climate change that you know constitute kind of could constitute economic or some kind of attacks on us or you know decrease our property values somehow. I would be clear too that it's really only the national party and parts of the local party among Republicans that try to seed doubts about climate change and that oppose climate action. There's lots of coastal Republican you know municipal officials. There's a lot of House representatives from Miami who say, you know, listen, I can definitely tell you from my own experience that the seas are rising. There's something about the climate that's changing, and we should do everything we can to stop it because it's causing real problems for my constituents.
But it sounds like every Republican is going to be voting for Pruitt based on what we know right now, including one Democratic senator from West Virginia. So what do you make about that if there's this concern among other constituents?
Well, I think I think the Republican Party is, first of all, you know, quite ideologically opposed to environmental regulations across the board for economic reasons. And the ways that action against climate change has taken in the past 5 years has been primarily regulatory because there's nothing, you know, Democrats and climate advocates in general haven't been able to get a bill through Congress. I think the second thing is that there was a concerted effort in the 90s to seed doubt about the roots of climate change in general. It was led by many of the same scientists who actually told people that smoking was safe for many decades after most medical scientists knew that it wasn't. And it seeded a lot of doubts about whether climate change was real, whether the science behind it was legitimate. And I think that effort was very effective in kind of turning climate change into this partisan issue, into this thing where your opinion about it means something about your identity, rather than your opinion about it just being, you know, an assessment you've made about the world. There is something odd happening with the American National Republican Party and climate change, because when we look across the country, or rather across the world, there's no other conservative, you know, center-right party in the world that has that says climate change isn't happening, or that has as many doubts about it as so many senior Republicans do. You know, even a friend from the UK just sent me this book. In the UK, the royals are supposed to be apolitical. They can't engage on any partisan issue. And climate change is so non-political in Britain that Prince Charles just wrote a book trying to educate adults about it. And so it's really only in America that we have this divide about it. And I think it's because of our high partisanship that exists.
And we leave it there. Rob, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
That was Rob Meyer, an associate editor at The Atlantic, where he covers climate change and technology. And he joined us to talk about how climate change is being discussed in the Senate confirmation hearings.
Consumers, insurance companies, and healthcare providers are experiencing a bit of deja vu. Politicians are once again attempting to make a big change in the American healthcare system, and this time Republicans are in the driver's seat.
But there's disagreement within the party about how fast they should go about dismantling Obamacare and where they'll end up. Shemaine Mills reports on the impact of healthcare changes and the impact they could have on jobs and careers.
Most Americans get health insurance where they work. Some are stuck in jobs they hate but can't leave because they'd lose benefits. There's a name for that, job lock. A 2008 Harvard Business School study estimated it affects 11 million people. 30-year-old Sadie Tischer was able to free herself from so-called job lock because of the Affordable Care Act. In 2015, 2 years after the marketplace was up and running, she bought health coverage for herself and started a business.
I have always wanted to work for myself and be an entrepreneur.
Tischer formerly worked as a disability benefits specialist for Milwaukee County and also as an elder benefits specialist for a nonprofit law firm. Now she's an independent insurance agent with her own office in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin Health Insurance Advocate.
I love the independence of it. I love making my own hours. Deciding the direction of my business is amazing.
Before the ACA, getting insurance could be difficult. When Tischer was laid off from her job at Legal Action of Wisconsin in her mid-20s, she tried to get individual coverage and was told she had a pre-existing condition.
My pre-existing conditions were small things. I had hurt my ankle in a hiking incident and had to have physical therapy for it. The issue was resolved, but it was still considered a pre-existing condition.
She also had been on an antidepressant after a family member died. Because of these two pre-existing conditions, she was denied insurance she sought and offered a less comprehensive plan. Even though this was before the ACA, some insurers still allowed parents to put children on their plan until age 26. And that's what Tischer did. It's a popular provision of the ACA. President-elect Trump has said he supports it. But if young people can be on their parents' insurance, they're not purchasing their own coverage. State Representative Joe Sanfilippo says this is an example of how the ACA is unsustainable and not well thought out. The chair of the Assembly's Health Committee says it's a great benefit, but it undermines the insurance market.
Well, you want those young, healthy people buying insurance and paying premiums. So now you're shooting yourself in the foot when you allow them to be on somebody else's plan until they're 26.
So Republicans have a dilemma. Scrap all of Obamacare or save some of it. Keeping older children on parents' insurance is popular but costs money. The House has laid the groundwork to repeal Obamacare, but there's no consensus on a replacement or when it might take effect that makes some who rely on the marketplace, like Tischer, nervous.
I always tell clients it's kind of a game that we play. We're betting on our own future health. And the Affordable Care Act sets mandated limits for an individual's out-of-pocket spending. Before the Affordable Care Act, it was the opposite.
In other words, patients were on the hook for bills until they went bankrupt. Before the ACA, insurers could stop paying after a certain amount, usually $1 million over a lifetime of benefits. Patients without insurance are a problem for health care providers, too. Mike Wallace is CEO of Fort Healthcare. During a panel discussion in Madison, he says he's seen a lot of changes in the industry, and he's preparing for more by channeling his inner Aaron Rodgers from the Green Bay Packers.
I tell people to R-E-L-A-X. You know, seriously, a little perspective on this on the front lines.
Wallace says if Obamacare is repealed, people will still need care. And he says it's their job to ensure they get it. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow, Donald Trump will be sworn in as the 45th president of the United States. We'll check in as the day unfolds.
We'll get our weekly look at the top state news headlines in our Wisconsin News Roundup. Rob Mentzer from USA Today Network Wisconsin will be back with us for a look at some of the top stories in state politics and more.
And it's winter, which means it is the ideal season to get baking, have yummy smells coming out of the oven. And tomorrow we get advice for better baking using wholesome ingredients. Get some inspiration for some weekend baking.
Yeah, I may actually look for that inspiration and try to do something this weekend. I haven't baked enough this winter, I'll say that. That and more coming up tomorrow on Central Time. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9, it's the Joy Cardine Show. Tomorrow after 6, tell Joy where to go for great ethnic restaurants around Wisconsin. Joy's guest has some recommendations, and you can share your favorites, too. That's tomorrow morning after 6 here on the Ideas Network.
Coming up next, it's the news from NPR and WPR, and then Milwaukee's Common Council announced that it's going to take on problem landlords who rent out substandard housing while evading taxes and fines. We'll talk to a city alderman about the plan. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farad. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Thank you.